Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is a multiple gunshot survivor. She outwitted her attacker, who had invaded her home, and he was intent on killing her. She has turned that experience into her purpose, helping other survivors of violence find their way back to a place of wholeness. Her name is Jenny Judson, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bobby. Glad to be here.
I'm so looking forward to this. I'm so glad that it was a mutual connection of ours. He connected us, and I've been looking forward to this interview.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. It's very flattering. This is my first time being a guest on a podcast like this, and I hope that your audience finds my little chat here interesting and useful to them.
I'm certain that they will. So with that, perfect segue, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story that led you to here?
Sure. Well, let's see. I'm a multiple gunshot wound survivor.
I guess that's a big thing.
Lead with that. Yeah. And I've kind of turned into a trauma recovery specialist. I think of myself as a SME, a subject matter expert on recovering trauma and gun violence. After spending about 20 years really driving high growth and change at finance and technology companies here in the Bay Area, I really have transitioned after the shooting and going through all this trauma to really focus on more meaningful work, which is really helping people and specifically helping individuals navigate through periods of high kind of growth and change post-traumatic event.
Yeah.
And about my particular event, I just relocated twice in a year to a new little community. Once to be with my fiance and once to be without him, I'll just say.
And in that order, I believe.
Once to be with him and once to be. We were, you know, building a house and living illegally on a construction site. And it was just, I called uncle. And anyway, it was just time to kind of gain my sanity. So I, you know, get my 15-year-old and my dog and find a little kind of summer cottage to move into. So we were settling into this little house. Just my daughter and I again. I'd always been a kind of a sole provider, single parent individual. So she was thrilled to not share me anymore. But anyway, we were settling into this house. And one day I was gone on a day worth of errands, and my daughter was home alone in the house. And while she was there, our neighbor who lived across the street broke in while she was home alone.
So scary.
Yeah, really scary for her. She actually was very blasé about the whole thing. She didn't even call anyone. Maybe she's exaggerating the story, right? I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I also am alarmed by the, you know, what I'm hearing on the other side of the phone. So she tells me the story and I think, okay, all right, I'm absorbing it. And, I'll be home in 10 minutes. So I hang up with her and on my way home, just out of precaution, I call the local sheriff's department and I just say, hey, listen, this is who I am. This is my address. I just want you to know that, you know, my teenager said that this happened and I wasn't home. I'm on my way. I have a good relationship with my neighbor. I'm going to go over and have a conversation with him. But just in case I should disappear, that's where I went.
Just so you know.
And he was certainly very visible. He was retired and took care of everybody's houses in the neighborhood. It was, you know, half the people lived abroad and then this were kind of their vacation homes or people who were retired. It was a very mixed kind of vacation home, tourist destination, retirement folks. So, you know, you kind of keep eyes on and get to know the people who are kind of the mayors of the street. Yeah. Anyway, so I get home and talk to my daughter and the story was, you know, worse than I thought it was. He really did come in the house and onto the property a couple times. And she saw him come in the second time and kind of hid in the bathroom with an unplugged curling iron and waited for him to leave. And but she didn't call the police. She didn't call me. She didn't do anything until the parents said, hey, shouldn't we tell your mom about this? So I just thought, well, this is really strange, but still thinking, okay, let's give this guy the benefit of the doubt, right? When I went over to ask him, you know, if there was a problem with the house. And pretty quickly, my neighbor erupted in rage. I mean, saying really every horrible racist thing you could say to another human being. You know, rage that's coming out of that other human is something that I had never really seen or experienced. You see people get upset, and even with the videos and the Karens and all that stuff, but this was, and it's coming at you full force. It just felt like pure kind of dark, evil rage coming at you. They were just trying to talk to him to get his side of the story. And I get about that far and I look up and he's walking back across the street with a large handgun. And I just see, and I go, oh my God, you know, he's got a gun. He's got a gun. And I close the door and I lock it. We got to go call 911 and get in the bathtub. Feel a bullet just whiz by me. But I look down and there's blood on my chest. And I was like, I can't believe I just got shot in the chest. And now he's at point blank range. I'm on the immediate other side of the door. He knows exactly where I am.
Where you are.
Yeah. And the room is just exploding again. So I fly down to where I was before on the other side of the door. It was so insanely loud. I get shot in the knee. I don't get my body all the way back across the bathroom. I got two bullet shots. Now I can't run, you know. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to get shot in the head. I'm going to get shot in the head. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to die. What a waste. Is it going to hurt? You know, everything kind of goes white. And I'm like, I'm literally waiting to see if I'm going to feel the bullet as it's entering my brain. She just starts screaming. She's dead. She's dead. She's dead. She's dead. And the bullet stopped. And I can see my head is right by the door. So I can see underneath the crack, right? And I see him take a step forward, like he's leaning towards the door and listening. And I'm just frozen. I'm holding my breath. I'm trying not to move. I'm hoping, you know, my blood's coming out quietly. And he listens for a second and then he turns and he leaves. So Jen's screaming in the phone still, trying to get the police to hurry up because there was a break in the action. And, you know, it was just a really intense situation.
The presence of mind to have your friend say that you're dead. I mean, just great presence of mind. Ultimately, how long did it take before the police got there?
It felt like 45 minutes.
Oh my God. Didn't you tell me like you counted something like 22, 23 bullets?
Yeah. By my count, I thought, you know, probably between 21 and 23 bullets were fired. That was kind of my guess today. I mean, you know, it takes me longer to tell the story than it did for all the, you know, the guns. Cause he was just like, pow, 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 pow. Right.
Yeah.
He was absolutely just, you know, let me get into this house, you know, let me shoot her through the door as I'm walking to it. And then I'm just going to unload until I kill her.
He just went off. I mean, he went off. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah.
And Jenny, that was like a couple years ago now, right?
Yeah. It was 2 years ago.
And you're still in the court proceedings with, like, he's hasn't gone to trial yet.
No, he has not gone to trial. We are taking the slow road. So he hired the most expensive attorneys in the county, and he has pled not guilty by reason of insanity, which probably adds a couple years on to waiting to get to the trial.
Man. So I guess where my mind goes with this too is like the incredibly traumatic. I can't even imagine the fear and the just the disbelief of, is this really happening? So then, you know, two gunshot wounds, you have to go through surgery. How do you even start to come back from that?
Very slowly.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I don't know. I say very slowly, but honestly, you know, my situation at the time was I didn't have a job. I just relocated to a new house. My daughter was starting school. I had to move pretty quickly. I had to figure out where I was going to live, where she was going to live. I was not going back into that house, which means
no.
I had to move out. And I don't know if you've ever tried to find a place to rent immediately with a large dog, but you pretty much are limited to, you know, dumps, or there's not a lot out there that's halfway decent when you're trying to, you know, be a mom and provide a good environment. So it was going to take a long time. So I knew that I had to get myself up and running as quickly as possible. I didn't have the luxury of going home to a family. I didn't have the luxury of folks around me. Everyone lived out of state. So, you know, I was pretty methodical in getting myself up and running as quickly as possible. It was very important to me. So I became very, very proactive in my own recovery. I found every individual that I could talk to, every recommendation for different things that would help. You know, different light therapies or therapists, or, you know, I learned a lot about PTSD. I learned a lot about trauma, and I learned a lot about myself in this situation of how I needed to really heal myself so that I could continue to move forward with my life.
Yeah. And when we spoke before, you said not just make it past the event, but how do you become a whole person again?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody wants to hear the story. It's a great, you know, shoot up, bang them up. You know, she lives. There was a, you know, police, they evacuated my neighborhood. There was a 17-hour police standoff. You know, there was all this additional drama and stuff, and some really good stories in there as well. The dog did not die. The dog survived.
You know, I was going to say, thank God.
Bruce was alive. I saw him as they were dragging me out. He was hiding in the back fence. So that was good.
Oh.
You know, so there's some really good stories, you know, and some positive things that happen along the way as well. But, you know, for me, the story is, it's the aftermath, really.
That's right.
Like, how do you put yourself back together after something like this happened? Like, you think of, you know, Humpty Dumpty, right? How
you said that last time.
Together? Yeah.
Yeah, or but exactly.
Like, it really is. It's like, you know, the thing about trauma, I've learned so much about trauma, and, you know, hopefully I can spend my life talking to people about not just my event, but other people's events, because how you recover from trauma is very personal, you know, and what is trauma? Mine was violent. Not everybody's going to have a violent traumatic experience, but, you know, trauma really is an unexpected life event that potentially, you know, there's a shift in your identity or your, you know, your reason for being.
Yeah.
And it could be divorce, loss of a job, death, your house burned down, you know, something that you never, that was just unimaginable. And then you wake up one day and you've got a big pile of, you know, mess that you have to clean up and deal with.
And there it is.
And there it is. It's like, oh my gosh, here, the huge pile of mess. I've never been through something like this before. I don't know anybody that's had, you know, gunshot wounds, and I have a steel plate. I got to keep my leg, which is great. I have a steel plate, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to walk. I mean, I didn't have any peers to be able to talk to. And so I just thought, okay, I need to start educating myself right away. And so for me, the journey really begins with, how do you deal with putting your life back together after something like this happens? And, you know, gunshot wounds in this country are, you know, they're more and more prevalent, and PTSD was kind of sexy at the time. With COVID, I think now everybody understands what trauma feels like to a certain extent. But, you know, for me at the time, I really needed to get active in my own recovery and really explore what it would take to get moving again. It's like, you know, if somebody dies in your life, there's a protocol. A funeral has to be done. There are steps that need to happen. You know, if your house burns down, you know, you call insurance. There are steps, but kind of a gunshot wound to me and a criminal, you know, investigation and a DA, you know, there wasn't really a roadmap for any of that stuff.
No.
And one of the things about gun violence in particular, it's a lonely, lonely survivalship. For some reason, people don't want to talk about guns. It's immediately, well, what did you do? And you're not taking my guns away. Mm. And nothing about the person that this happened to, because it just becomes political. It's like talking about abortion, right? It's like, you know, it's not the woman's life that this is going on with and what her circumstances are. It's like, you're just on one side of the political divide or another, and the individual that it's happening to absolutely goes away. It's very, very lonely. So, you know, it's kind of, if I think about it in terms as a, you know, unexpected death in someone's life, which is probably more relatable to people, it's, you know, what happens when everybody leaves your house and the funeral is over?
That's right.
And you're sitting there by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know how to necessarily, you know, offer you help. You don't know what you need because you've never been here before.
You're trying to figure it out.
You're trying to figure it out. So people will say, well, what can I do? Like, I don't know.
Figure I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And then people will give you, well, try all of these 10 things. I'm like, okay, well, that's just 10 more things than all the other stuff that I have to do to kind of deal with the situation that just happened. It's really the journey of moving through it and getting your life back together.
Yeah. What were some of those things that helped you to move forward and become a whole person again?
Yeah, there's a lot. I think if I were to start at the very beginning and kind of close my eyes and take a look back, and I'm, you know, fresh with wounds from the hospital, it's really, you know, the basis of every human, no matter if you've gone through a trauma like this or not, is your physical basic needs, which is really just focusing on four main things to start with, which is eating, drinking, sleeping, and pooping. I know people are afraid to talk about poop, but it's a huge indication of stress in your body, right? And, you know, are the painkillers tearing you up? Are you holding on to stress? It's a really good indication. Is my body functioning correctly? I've got all of these wounds. I can't walk, but am I able to function on at least a very basic level? Can I go to the bathroom? Right? Are things working inside my body? Am I able to sleep? What do I do for that? And it's, for me, it was really starting there. After that, then it's, you know, your mind is racing. My mind was absolutely racing. And I felt that thinking about all of the details that I now had to figure out how to do with the wounds that I was nursing and the situation of my life, I thought to myself, I am going to have a heart attack. I'm not going to survive this situation because the stress of it is going to kill me. Right. And I remember every time I saw my daughter, I would try and give her every single life lesson that I could because I did not expect to survive the stress of the situation. I thought there's no way my body could handle all this. So that's kind of where I started, was really the mindfulness of what needs to happen right now. You've got this big ball of worry.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen today? Do I need to do any of this stuff today? No. Do I need to do any of it tomorrow? No. So it really was focus on, it was compartmentalizing, narrowing my train of thought. And it really was focusing on, am I eating? Am I drinking? Eat, drink, sleep, and poop. And then from
there, the basic needs.
Yeah, basic needs. Let's just start with the basics. Now let's focus on our wound. Like, can I, you know, getting in and out of a bathtub, getting showering, all of the, going to the bathroom. I mean, these were really, really difficult tasks, right? When you've kind of, my, you know, had this dead leg, basically. It was super painful and very swollen and, you know, rushed back to the hospital a couple of times. So it was really just, I have to get my body. Let me focus on my body. Let me just focus on this vehicle of mine. because that's the only way I'm going to be able to move forward is if I have this vehicle to do it in. So that was stage one. And then you kind of have to broaden out from there. So your immediate physical needs, number one, two, you know, really kind of shut down the overall thoughts, focus on very few things, compartmentalize, but then it's really dealing with your brain for the most part. Mm-hmm. So I went and got some counseling. I wanted to learn a little bit about, you know, PTSD and what it meant and how it worked in the brain. So I educated myself there and figured out how I could accelerate really my healing process really by understanding PTSD and how it manifests in the body and what it felt like for me in particular. But, you know, beyond that, it was the stuff that I always thought was kind of woo-woo-y. I've always been kind of an intense individual, a lot of self-discovery and creating my own narrative and such, very self-aware. But I'd never really understood forgiveness. I always knew that was an area that I didn't like to forgive, right? Holding on to that anger made me feel powerful, right?
Yeah.
My choice to release somebody from the, you know, you did me wrong. I'm going to, you know, you're going, you're damned to me. And for the first time, I thought about, well, that's something that I really have to understand quickly, because with all of the stress and the strain and you know, my brain on the fritz at the moment, I can't really have any more negative or any kind of thoughts that make me upset. I have to somehow obtain a sense of calm inside my body, regardless of what's going on in the world around me, because that's where it all lives. It's in our brains, right?
That's right.
And I thought of people who I'd seen being interviewed on TVs at different times where, you know, a parent had lost their child to murder, and that parent forgave the person who murdered their child. In fact, you know, the mom would go and visit the, you know, prisoner in jail, and, you know, they became, you know, pen pals and friends, and there was forgiveness there. And I just thought, how in the world?
Yeah.
How in the world? They handled it through love and forgiveness. And that was a peaceful way for them to be able to navigate the world and still feel okay, no matter what their situation is. And I thought, I got to get me some of that, right? I really have to figure this out. I knew that I was going to have to face this guy in court time and time again. And the thought of having that physical rage inside my body was very uncomfortable and would really ruin my day.
Yeah. Well, think about the toll it takes on you.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I don't know if you've ever, I've been through a divorce. It's the same thing. You're having a great day and an email comes in from your ex and it says whatever it says, but you know, what happens inside your my body was just, you know, your heart, your rage, your brain, it's fear. It's, you know, it's that primal part of your brain protecting yourself. Mm-hmm. But it can wreak havoc on an otherwise normal day. And you really have to then get yourself out of that state, or just saying, okay, this day is pretty much over with. I'm just going to, you know, tomorrow will be a new day. And it's just, you know, I'm really stressed out at this moment.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had to figure out forgiveness and bring that into my life. So that was step number one, is really learn about forgiveness and getting some coaching there, or just being open to the idea of it. That was huge. Wow. For me. It gave me a sense of peace. And forgiving myself, because I blamed myself. I put my daughter in this situation. You know, I moved for a man, something I said I would never do. And we weren't married yet, something I said I would never do. You know, I was like, I created this mess of a situation. And this, I am not an innocent bystander in this, right? That's me taking responsibility of my life. But there's negativity in that. So I had to forgive myself. And that was really hard. I had to forgive everyone and everything in my life. Because in order to create space to really heal and move forward, I think most people, you really have to create a peaceful place and get rid of as much of the gunk that you've been carrying around inside your life, so that you can really open and embrace something else.
Yeah. Because carrying that around, it only hurts us. It doesn't hurt the person that we're upset with. They don't even care. They don't even know.
He didn't care. He doesn't care if I'm upset.
No.
It's not going to
make him happy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did not want to give this man the satisfaction of winning.
No.
That was a big theme. So, you know, people ask me all the time, well, how did you survive this? Where did you, you know, for me, it was, I'm a fighter is what I learned in the middle of a gun battle, right? I took some pepper spray to a gun battle, but I still won.
That's
fighter.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a fighter. There's a right and a wrong. And my moral compass, I try and move with as much righteousness without judgment as possible, but I was doing the right thing. I'd done everything right. And I was not going to see this guy, you know, get away with what he did. So from the very, early on, I, you know, wheeled myself into the courtroom, and he was, you know, denied bail, which was a really big thing. And I didn't want him to be able to upset me. I didn't want him to see me. I didn't want him to see the mess that he'd made. And I made a decision pretty early on that if I ceased to be the Jenny that I loved and adored, right? If I became a shell of myself, if I became too scared to leave my home, if I was no longer able to laugh or experience joy, if I became an introvert and hid away from myself to protect myself, then I would really cease to be. And the Jenny that I knew would in fact be dead, and he would win. And I thought, that I'm not going to let that happen. And I don't have to be that Jenny before, but I'm not going to let him win by having him ruin my life and have me be really upset over this. And he's not going to ruin my life over this. I'm going to build my life, and I'm going to be, you know, the best. What is that saying? The best revenge is success, or something like that.
Living well, or something like that.
Is the best. So I thought, I'm going to be the best version. I'm going to be a better version of myself. I'm going to take this, and I'm going to be triumphant in it.
Yeah.
It was with that I kind of started to propel, and then start checking my boxes. What do I need to do? What's next? Yep. Am I, you know, gratitude? I'm thrilled to be alive. Absolutely thrilled to be alive, and knew that if I was able to survive that situation, you know, there but the grace of God, that I would spend my life trying to help people get through their traumatic situation. Because if you're looking for a sign in your life, people are always looking for a sign to make a change. I thought to myself, well, if I don't believe that this second chance is a sign that I maybe should be doing something different, then I don't know what kind of sign I'm waiting for. And I could either pretend that this didn't happen and go back to just my regular life, and that's one way, but I'm not sure that really honors the life that I was given my second chance to come back around by forgetting it and never talking about it. There's a trauma recovery conversation and understanding that is really hard to find and really hard to get to. And so if I can use my story as a platform to help other people in their trauma recovery, their PTSD, whatever I can do to help people really find a motivator that can propel them forward so that they can go not from just surviving a situation. I'm so thankful that I survived, but that wasn't enough for me. I really want to thrive, right? I survived. If I don't do anything, you know, he still ruins my life, he wins. I really wanted to thrive from this. I wanted to be an example to my daughter, to the friends at her school, you know, as a single woman. You are the master of your own destiny. Mm-hmm. And I needed to now show myself and those around watching me, especially my little daughter, that you pick yourself back up triumphantly and you move forward.
Well, as you were talking there, Jenny, it occurred to me, it's like there were two battles, right? The battle that occurred with the gun violence in the bathroom in your house, you know, to just stay alive. And then the battle afterwards, which is, okay, so who am I now, and what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Because when we've been graced with that second opportunity, what do we do with it? And I love that you're turning it to how do I help others navigate what you had to navigate.
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, I think that helping other people, thinking outside of yourself is one of the best things you can do, especially when you're in a deep, dark place, to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of coaching now. I do a lot of kind of trauma recovery coaching. And so I'm on all of these different blogs giving advice when people are asking for it. And there was a woman who was on there, and she was in a deep, dark place and felt like, you know, she just can't get her life moving. She feels like everybody is making huge strides or already a success, and she's just scared and stuck and doesn't feel like anything she's doing is getting her in the right direction. And she just wanted to know, how do I get out of this space? And I just, you know, very simply said, you know, go volunteer at a woman's, you know, shelter or with kids who don't have parents. I mean, there's always a group of people that could benefit from having you around, having you in their lives.
And it can be small, right? It can be something small that we do.
It could be, you know, dropping off donations, you know, to some sort of a shelter, or, you know, clothing the homeless. It can be anything. It can be anything. And I think that, you know, the thing about trauma and PTSD, again, not everybody is going to go through traumatic experiences, but it feels a lot like depression, which more people are, you know, akin to feeling than not. And it doesn't matter what your story is to get you to that point, right? It's not whose trauma is the worst or whose story is the most depressing. Once you're down in that deep, dark place inside the deepest, darkest parts of your mind, it's the same amount of effort to get you out of that.
It doesn't matter what the source is.
It doesn't matter what the source is. You're stuck in you're running your narrative in your brain, and you're focusing on it. And the more that you can get out of your own head and understand that you're in your head, two, that you've got the power to change it, and then three, what to do with it. But helping other people, you'll forget about your own problems when you're helping other people. It feels good. They're happy that you're there. You're making a difference in somebody else's life. And yeah, by the way, life can't always get worse. There is an endless bottom, y'all, that we are falling through time and time again, right? You know, you've got to figure out the ways that work for you to pull yourself up out of that. There's plenty of tools. There's lots of ways to do that. I really focus on a more kind of a whole body wellness trauma recovery. One of the things that I learned is that the therapists in this country don't have a lot of experience around, you know, serious trauma. I think they're getting a lot more training now. So I went and did a lot of training with the experts in the trauma field. Most of the people who deal with severe PTSD are working with the first responders in our country, which is great, but it's very difficult to get any kind of, you know, appointments that way. And so you're stuck with kind of normal, you know, psychologists and therapists who will give you kind of the five stages of grief and all that stuff. But it doesn't really help you move your life forward when you're talking about the past or how you're feeling today. It's like, yeah, I need to know how I'm going to laugh again. Like, am I going to be able to trust humans? Why can't I make eye contact with people? Like, how do I get these emotions that I'm feeling out of me? I've got all of these triggers now. My temper is short. I'm feeling different ways. What do I do going forward? None of that is really discussed.
Right.
And so through it all, it really is, how do you become a whole person again? How do you, you know, how do you put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Or another way to say it is like a puzzle piece, right? It's like, it's a jigsaw puzzle, and, you know, it's a mess on the table. And the more you start kind of turning the pieces over and putting an outline, you'll eventually get a vision of what the picture is going to be. But it's understanding that we all have the pieces. All the pieces are already inside of us. It's just the effort of really putting them back together until we see the vision of where we want to go and doing it. So, you know, it's about, you know, how well are you in all the areas of your life? From, do you have a sense of purpose, spirituality? You know, what does that mean? A sense of meaning? How are your relationships? You know, are you intellectually curious? Are you socially well? Are you out there in the world putting yourself out there? How are your emotions? Are you able to laugh and cry? Can you talk about what happened? You know, how's your nutrition? What are you learning? So there's all of these areas in our life that we are that we can put some time and energy into to really build ourselves back up, to be the healthiest version of we can be of ourselves in that moment, so that we can continue to move forward.
Yeah. And I think that putting the, I love the word picture, the image of the puzzle pieces on the table, because we've got the pieces. And so I love that. And I also think part of that is then having the hope and the belief that it's possible for you. And I think someone, you know, that's why I think the coaching that you're doing, it's powerful, because, hey, someone else who's been through what I've been through, they've done it and they've survived, and not just survived, but you know, they're thriving, which is where we all want to be. And it's possible. So I love that. I love that you're helping others in that way.
Yeah. Now more than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, people are terrified, right? These feelings that we have, and you know, the world's a big, scary place. You turn on the news, everybody's yelling and screaming at each other. You're forced to pick a side and hate the other person, right? All of the triggers that you see online where people get, you know, really upset about things that maybe they shouldn't be upset about. That is what trauma looks like in somebody's body, mm-hmm. right? You're having irrational responses to the world around you.
Yeah. How do you cope? If people are interested, Jenny, in the type of work that you're doing and how they can reach out, learn more, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. You can find me online. I'm on Facebook more than I am on Instagram or Twitter. You can find me that way under Jenny Jetson. My email address is iamjennyjetson@gmail.com. I also have a website, iamjennyjetson.com. I'm starting to put together a program around kind of trauma 101 so people can really get an understanding nice. Of what happens in the brain. And I'm focusing it around really trauma 101 and getting yourself back to work, really. Mm. Once this is all over and people head back to work, if you haven't dealt with the trauma that you potentially even could be experiencing now with all of the uncertainty in COVID-19, there's a lot that you can be doing in the quiet of your own home to really get your own health and wellness on track. And so I'll be putting together some tutorials and
nice.
you can follow me there.
That's cool.
Thanks for asking. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I think the work you're doing, you know, it obviously comes from a place a deep meaning for you, and you have a lot to share and people need it. So I'm happy to help you get that word out. So in, like I say, this has been great. Thank you for sharing your story. So, you know, transparently, is there any final thoughts that you have before we wrap up?
I would just like to say to your listeners that, you know, I see you and I feel you. You know, once you've gone through a traumatic event and your world falls apart and you've got no money, no friends, no support, nowhere to go, you know, I feel that pain. I get it. I've lived it. And it's a very, very scary place to be. And I need you to know that you have survived your situation for a reason.
Yeah.
And I need you to find that reason. But you survived this for a reason. You were here for a reason. There's a purpose for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And to take for granted this life that you're living, regardless of everything that you've been through, to take for granted your life, you're doing your survivorship a bit of a disservice. I think that we need to share our stories more, open yourself up to other people, be proud of yourself that in spite of it all, that you are here and you're worthy and you've got everything inside of you that you need to move forward and it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I can hear your passion there on the, you know, you're here for a reason. Right. And we all are. And it's finding that. And also the knowing that you'll be okay. So you will be okay. It's a journey. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been great. And I know it's going to help a lot of people.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you for your time and your listeners. I wish everybody well. Please feel free to reach out, follow me. I've been really trying to tell my story transparently as much as possible. just because I think that it resonates with people. And so few individuals, I think, talk about the recovery process. Mm-hmm. I mean, the story is fabulous, but it's the recovery process. That's really where you have to roll up your sleeve, and that's where the hard work begins. And I don't think we have enough examples of people sharing what in particular worked for them that maybe somebody else could try. So, you know, feel free to follow me, and I'm more than happy to help out in any way that I can to help you feel better.
Perfect.
So thank you, everyone.
Thank you. I hope that you found that conversation with Jenny helpful. As Jenny and I were talking, I was thinking about how, thankfully, many of us have not and will not face the type of traumatic and violent event that she did. However, 2020 has been its own trauma for a lot of people. It made me think about how we can learn from Jenny's experience and apply it to our own journey as 2020 comes to a close. Here are some of my thoughts. Number one, that growth and change are possible after a traumatic event. Jenny's story illustrates something that's very important for us. Growth and change doesn't happen on its own. As she said, we have to take responsibility for our own healing and recovery. In her case, she educated herself on how others coped who had faced things similar to her and the effects of that. Importantly, she also researched things that she found didn't work for her. And that's okay too. I think that's part of taking that responsibility. What works and what doesn't? And how do I put that together for myself? Number two, the real story begins when the traumatic event ends. This was one of the most powerful aspects of the story to me. We have a tendency to think that once the event is over, everything just goes back to normal. But from Jenny's story and my own experience with the massive fire out here this fall, the end of the event is simply the beginning of the rest of your life and figuring out what's next. I loved how she put it. How do I put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Number three, trauma is an unexpected life event. Now, this might be a dumb moment for me, but I've never really heard anyone express it like that before. And yet when I think about it, it makes perfect sense. It's an unexpected life event that disrupts the system of our lives. Number four, sometimes it can be hard to create your own blueprint for coping. In Jenny's case, she didn't really have any peers who had shared what she did. And I think this gets at what many of my guests have spoken about this year. Find others who have been on your path before you and learn from them. From that, you can then create a blueprint that makes sense for you, just as Jenny had to. Number five, after experiencing a trauma, focus on the basics first. Nutrition, proper sleep, caring for our basic physical needs. Then branch out. I loved her hack for managing stress. What needs to happen right now? Is it truly something that has to be dealt with today? If not, find a way to set it aside. I have found myself using this hack over the last few weeks as things have been super busy and there's all this stuff I want to get to and get done. And the way I've worked it out for myself is this. If it needs to be done today, or even in the next few days, great, I'll get it done. And if it doesn't need to be done, but I have plenty of margin to do it now and I feel the energy to do it now, terrific. If not, it can probably wait a day or two instead of adding more stress to the pile. Number six, I thought it was a very powerful part of the conversation when Jenny said, and in the past, holding on to anger has made her feel powerful. And now she's come to realize it takes away her power when she holds on to the anger. Because the anger, as she said, it really only hurts us. About 12 years ago or so, I read a powerful book called The Dance of Anger, and I highly recommend it. One of my major takeaways from the book is that anger is merely an emotion. It's not negative. It's not positive. It is just an emotion. It is a data point. And when we come to see anger this way, we can learn from it what it has to teach us, and then we can move on. It's not a bad emotion on its own. It's what we do with the anger that often makes it negative or harmful. Number seven, she spoke of forgiveness as something that we do for ourselves as a way of setting ourselves free. And I know that this can be hard. But the thing is, when we don't forgive, we are truly only hurting ourselves. The person that we are upset with might not even know it, and they may not even care if we are upset. So we forgive as a way to heal ourselves. Number 8, I liked how Ginny was adamant that this wasn't going to ruin her life or cause her to cease to be who she is. I also thought it was really important that she said that we might be different after the event, and that's okay. How could we be the same after something traumatic? But the important part was that she knew that she had to find a way to not just survive it, but to thrive by finding the best version of herself. Number 9, all the pieces that we need to recover are already inside of us. We just need to put them together in a way that makes sense for us. I think that that is an immensely comforting thought as we move forward. Again, those were just some of my takeaways, and I hope that you found valuable takeaways of your own in Jenny's story. On a different and exciting note, the new year is fast approaching, and as you know, that's the time when we rush to set goals and resolutions for the coming year. Sadly, by late January, those goals and resolutions too often begin gathering dust. So, to fight the gathering dust bunnies, I'm putting together a free guide on how we can recognize if we are falling prey to one of the biggest derailers of our goals, the just wait voice. The just wait voice is that voice that shows up inside of us that plants doubt and hesitation in our mind. I've coached over 3,000 people in my career, and I've seen this insidious little voice show up and whisper doubt in our ear just as we are about to act. And so, instead of acting on our goals, we decide to wait indefinitely. As a coach who has seen it so many times, I have to tell you that I hate that voice, and I want to help combat it with what I've learned over the years. So watch for that in the coming weeks. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories and guests who can help us all live more fulfilled and authentic lives. If you found it helpful, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple, as that is one of the best ways that you can help us share this message. And also, if you know of someone that you think could benefit from the podcast and the message that we are spreading, please share it with them. Our goal is to spread this message of hope and positivity.